Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Here's the Good News when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And we've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that to you? What if your plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? Or what if a carpenter said that? He who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client. Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who can't fix his own pipes or fix his own steps is incompetent? Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Now, listen to James Nielsen. He's a professor at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he said. He said, it's a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And he said, it's worse than that. And he said, most students actually graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without ever having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and their clients that it is a cruel hoax. Now, that's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. And it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. Courtroom strategy and procedure. Our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we've been talking about the bad news. I gave you that last week. Now we're talking about the good news. And the good news is that we can overcome the bad news. I'm going to tell you a story. The first thing we have to do in order to change our circumstances is to recognize what in the hell the problem is. You know, in a business sense, if I'm losing money in my company, I got to find out why. Why is it that I'm not making money? Why is it that I'm not making a profit? What's happened here? Now, once I understand why it is that my profit is evaporating, is it high diesel costs? Well, does that mean that I'm not passing my costs through to my customers? I mean, I hear airlines going out of business because of the high fuel costs. Huh? Excuse me? No, I was born at night, but I wasn't born last night. When a businessman's costs go up, he simply passes that on to his customer. Now somebody's going to say, well, nobody will fly on the airline if you raise ticket prices. Well, okay. Well, if nobody flies on the airline, then it isn't high fuel prices that put me out of business. It was a lack of customers that put me out of business, which means that at that price, there aren't enough customers to support that industry. So that industry is no longer necessary. It's kind of like whale oil versus oil out of the ground. You know, who can produce the most oil the cheapest? And that's what the marketplace is all about. So when I watch the business news on television, I shake my head and I say, are these people serious? I mean, these people have been to college for crying out loud. You know, I'm not a genius by any stretch of the imagination, but I can figure out immediately that when my costs go up, and I just saw this the other day, and so did you, when Dow Chemical Company, their costs for fuel went from $8 billion a year to $32 billion a year, they increased the prices of their product by 25%. So now when you go to the store and you buy a bar of soap or you buy some product that contains chemicals in it, you're going to pay that price increase. And after all, Dow Chemical Company has to charge more because they're paying more. That's just that simple. It's no big mystery. And Dow Chemical isn't going to go out of business. Now, what you're witnessing here, then, is a lie. There's a big lie going on. This is not for the purposes, you know, of the average Joe Sixpack's consumption over here. What you're watching is the airline industry is being consolidated. The airline industry is a $1 trillion-a-year business. It represents about 10% of the gross domestic product. And the powers that be have decided to nationalize the airline industry. They're going to take it over just like the Russians operate the national airline in Russia. It's called Aeroflot. It's not owned by private stockholders. It's not owned by private persons. It's a monopoly. It's a government monopoly, just like the post office. The government has a monopoly on delivering the mail. Well, until the internet came up. And now all of a sudden they're scrambling, saying, well, all these people are sending their mail over the internet. So now what government wants to do is take over the internet and tax it. See? Now the purpose behind this is for government to make more and more money and to employ us as their feudal serfs. Now we don't like the word feudal serf, slave, or bond servant, so we call them employees, self-employed professionals. We hang different labels on ourselves, and by doing that, it makes us feel good when we go to work every day. It makes us feel good. What we really are under the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto, remember we got these two market forces. We got communism and we've got the Ten Commandments. It's all that there is out there, boys and girls, just those two market forces. And there are a group of people out here who profit from the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and they do not profit off of the 10 Commandments. And so it's very logical that those people would want to sell communism and that they'd want to sell away from the 10 Commandments. So how simple that is? No big mystery. Just business, nothing personal. Nothing religious about it, just money. So we can make more money off of more truck drivers, doctors, lawyers, and professionals and people out there if we practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto than we can and if we practice the 10 Commandments. See how simple that is? You get limited government with the Ten Commandments. You get all-pervasive top-down government with the Ten Planks. And so if you're a bureaucrat working with the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, or some other government agency, you want bigger, better, more all-invasive government, because that's where your paycheck comes from. That's where your money comes from. You want more of it. Just like the airline industry, they want more routes, more passengers, cheaper fuel. I mean, you know, they want all these things too. Now, there's a cause and effect relationship for everything that goes on around us. And so for us little bottom feeders down here at the bottom, I've said before, I'm not going to change the war in Iraq. That's a bigger problem than little Georgie Gordon can solve. And yet, your masters in Washington have persuaded you that if you vote, you can solve that problem in Iraq. And I don't believe it. That if you vote for the right guy, now this is the trick, you got to vote for the right guy. You got two guys up here. One of them's the right guy, one of them's the wrong guy. Don't ask me which one's which, because I can't tell. But one of them's the right guy, and one of them's the wrong guy. And they're out here busily trying to get you to support one side or the other. And if you get the right guy in the Oval Office, he's going to solve your economic problems, bring the price of gas down to $1 a gallon, and do all these wonderful things for you. And if you believe that, you got your head right up your dear ear. I mean, if you believe that. And I mentioned before, I said, you know, you people have been out here voting, you know, for the last 75 years. Hell, your problems are getting worse every time you vote. So I raised the question, are you really sure that you want to vote? It hasn't solved your problem. Has it occurred to you maybe that's the cause of your problem? You know, just a thought. You know. Not to tell you who to vote for or whether to vote or not, just give it a thought and see what that tells you. Now, I said I'm going to tell you a little story over here about money. I had a student come in here one time. He's a truck driver with the Navajo Truck Company. On the last program, I told you got to get out of debt. If you're in debt, then you're a credit debt serf. And as long as you're in debt, you're working for somebody, and you're not getting paid very well for it. Now, in the Bible, the word usury, that's the interest in modern parlance, but the word usury is used 23 times. 23 times. And every single time that you see it in the Bible, God tells you, don't do that. Right. Now, you people all have credit cards, and you all pay interest on your credit cards. You all have mortgages, or you had mortgages, and then you paid interest on your mortgage. And then you all got cars, and you bought these cars, and you pay interest on this debt. Now, you're paying all this interest. So. And your biggest concern is, can I make these payments? You're not concerned at all about the interest rate, nor about the total overall payback for the product or the goods and services that you're buying. It's just, can I make these payments? And so that's what the salesman in the car lot asks you. You know, can you afford $310 a month? No, I can't afford $310 a month. He shows you another car. Can you afford $290? No, I can't afford $290. He shows you another car. Can you afford $180? At some point in time, yeah, I can afford $180. That's the car he's going to sell you. Now, when he sells you this car for $180 bucks a month, you don't sit down with a pen and paper and say, well, see, the term of the loan is 36 months. $180 a month times 36 is the total payback. What's the price on the car? Subtract that from the total payback. And then that tells you a little part of the story. You're going to buy one car for you and one car for the salesman. I think you'd be better off just buying one car, paying cash for it, and walking off the lot. And I'll show you how to do that in a minute. Because I'm amazed at the people who come in here. I mean, people that are doctors and lawyers. People that make buku bucks. I mean, I got people walking my door here that make $100 an hour. And they can't pay their bills. They got student loans, and they're upside down, making $100 an hour. So listen, if you're making $10 an hour and you can't make ends meet, I got news for you. There's lots of people out there that make 10 times more than you do, and they can't make ends meet either. They can't make their house payments. They can't pay their credit cards. They can't pay their student loans. Now, there's a cause for this. Now, let's see if we can't figure out how we can connect the dots. Because years ago, when Americans practiced the Ten Commandments, we didn't have any problems making our payments. We didn't have any problems with debt. When I was a boy, my dad did not have any debt problems. None. Zero. I don't know of hardly anybody that doesn't have debt problems today. And that's because you're in debt. My dad wasn't. Frank Rocha had absolutely no debt problems. None. Zero. He had money in the bank. Now, you may have money in the bank, but you can't make ends meet. Neither could the Navajo truck driver. Now listen to this. comes in my office here, comes to school. He had a $330,000 debt to the IRS. Now, he got into the tax protest movement, you know, like a lot of you people have done. Nothing bad about that necessarily, but it gets you into trouble, is what it does. So, anyway, the IRS comes down on him, and they said, well, you owe us $330,000, and we're going to put a lien on your paycheck. Now, this guy's getting $26 an hour. Now, you know, he might be sitting there saying, well, I need a hell of a lot of money. Well, maybe not today, but 20 years ago, $26 an hour was a god-awful lot of money. A lot of money. $26 an hour. Now, this guy is living well, and he got off on a tax protest, and he stopped paying his taxes, and pretty soon the government comes against him. He don't know how to defend now, so he jumped in the water, but he don't know how to swim. And that's where the tax protesters are, you know. They jumped in the water. Nobody taught them how to swim. Here at the law school, we teach people how to swim first, and then most people, when they know how to swim, don't jump into that kind of water. But I think that's a wiser course of action, you know. Stay out of that water. That's dangerous water there. That's, you got a riptide in it. But anyway, they left him $75 a week. So here's a guy, he got a wife and two kids. He's been making $26 an hour and spending money. It's $30,000 a year. He's doing well. Everything's going along fine. But bottom line here is, all of a sudden he's left with $75 a week. So he comes to school, tax school. And we took a look at his position over here, and I said, well, what you need to do is to quit your job at Navajo Truck Lines and go to work mowing grass. Now, at the time, I think minimum wage was about $3.25 an hour. And I said, if you go out and mow grass at $3.25 an hour, which is just minimum wage, I mean, you're going to make about, you know, $30 a day times 5 days a week, which would be $150 a week, which is double the $75 a week that you're getting right now. So we can immediately double your income. And he was really despondent. I came here for help. I came here because I need answers and solutions. I need this lien taking off my paycheck. And I said, son, wait a minute. You're not going to get that lien taken off your paycheck. You're never going back to where you were. This is where you're at now. You're playing a game of chess, and your opponent took your queen and both rooks. You're going to finish playing this game without a queen and without rooks. That's just life. It's the way it is. You know, you want to play games. Sometimes you lose, and you lost your queen and two rooks. And so he was just so despondent. You know, and I said, well, look, the bad news is that you lost your job. You know, your cushy $26 an hour job. And you didn't pay your taxes, and that was one of the conditions for having this cushy $26 an hour job, is that you pay these taxes. And that's because you're a cash cow. You went to public school, sir, and you learned how to drive truck. You were educated. You were educated and trained to be a bond servant for the United States of America. You are a bureaucratic cash cow, and you quit giving milk. Now, there's nothing worse than a cow that doesn't give milk. She eats feed and doesn't give you anything in return. So let me tell you, as an old cattleman over here, an old dairyman, when my cow goes dry, I sell her. I give her what we call a number 9 overcoat with cellophane wrapping. She goes to McDonald's for hamburger. See how that works? So the IRS came along and said, okay, we're just going to take your paycheck over here because you didn't pay us. But it's worse than that. It's like, worse than that. So he said, well, how long is it going to take me to pay off this $330,000? I said, son, now here's a guy. Now, he's not a college graduate, but he was a high school graduate. How long is it going to take me to pay off the $330,000 debt? He's in school here. I'm the teacher. Okay. I know he can't ever pay that debt off. He could pay on that debt at the rate that he's paying, which is everything that he earns except $75 a week, for the rest of his life. And when he gets all through, he's going to owe them $600,000 instead of $300,000. And he can't figure that out. Honest to God, he couldn't do the numbers. All right, so that tells me something. See, the purpose for the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto is to put you through this public education system and then not teach you how to do your arithmetic so that you can't figure out how long it's going to take you to pay off a debt that's unpayable. Now, the purpose for the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto is to make you a permanent, lifelong credit debt serf. And I don't care if you got a PhD behind your name there, partner. That's your position in life. That's what you were trained for. Now, it's true, if you're a PhD and you've got a professorship, you know, at the University of California, and you're pulling down $80,000 or $100,000 a year, you got a nice, neat, cushy job. But people that have nice, neat, cushy jobs are cash cows. They come in, they do their things. Like, let me describe it. I have cows. My cows, they stand out in the corral. I open the gate, and they come into the barn, stick their head in a stanchion, and I lock them in. That's while they're busy eating their feed, see? And these cows, they think that I'm their benefactor. They think I'm doing them a big favor. They love it. When I open the gate, they run into the barn. Because I've got grain in there, I've got feed, I've got alfalfa pellets. God, they love it. And they come in and they eat. Now, while they're eating, I sit down under them and I milk them. I take 3 gallons of milk out of them. And that milk's worth $10 a gallon. So I'm going to give them $1 or $2 worth of feed, and I'm going to take $10, $20, $30 worth of milk out of them. See? So while you're working at the University of California, and you stick your head in the stanchion, and you're busy chewing away and eating your feet over there, your government is milking you, Mr. PhD, and you are a very valuable cash cow. And you have been taught and trained from the first grade, maybe even preschool, to be a cash cow for government. That's what a taxpayer is. All right, so here's this truck driver now. Let me give you the numbers. Get your pen and paper out here. Let me show you what these numbers boil down to. If you're making $26 an hour, you're making right at $26,000 a year. In round numbers. Let's just round it off to $30,000 so you can keep it in your mind if you're driving down the road. $30,000 bucks a year. Yeah, you're probably getting a little overtime. Now, the government comes in and leaves you with $75 a week. And that's $300 a month, or $3,600 a year. So you get $3,600 bucks out of your $30,000. That brings you down to about $26,500. All right, now you got to pay your taxes out of this. So your government, nice guys that they are, taking 9% for Social Security and 17%, you know, 9, 7, 16, that's 26%. So they're taking about 25% of your $26,000 a year, and that's for your current taxes. Okay, so you get $26,000 bucks a year out of your $30,000, and now remember, you got to pay your taxes on $30,000. So it's, you know, 9% of $30,000 is about 10%, round numbers, $3,000 bucks for Social Security. And then 17%, you know, on the same $30,000 a year, you know, that's another 2/4, 1/6 of a $5,000. So that's $8,000 a year that they're taking out of your $26,000, see. So here you are, you're making $30,000, they're leaving you with $3,500, and then they're taking $8,000 out of that. So take 8 and 3 is $11,500, round off to $12,000 bucks out of your $30,000. This leaves you with $18,000 to pay on your debt. All right. Now, if you're paying $18,000 a year on your $330,000 debt, which is being compounded at 10% interest, all right, so let's take year number one, all right, year one. Write down $330,000, now take away $18,000 off of them. Well, first of all, let's put the interest on, it's 10%, so that's $33,000, so we'll write 33 under that. So that leaves you with $363,000. Now take $18,000 off of $363,000. At the end of the first year, 8, 5 is 13, 4, that's 345. Right. And so you started the year $330,000 in debt. You worked the whole year. You lived on 75 bucks a week. Paid your taxes, and that was $8,000. Out of the $30,000 that you earned, you had $18,000 to apply to your $330,000 debt, and now you're in debt $345,000. So you've increased your debt by $15,000. All right, that's the end of year one. Let's try year two. Year two, $345,000. Now let's take 10% interest on 345, and that's $34,500 bucks. We'll call it 34,000. 5 and 4 is 9, 4 and 3 is 7. That's 379,000. So let's take 18,000 away from 379,000. That leaves us with 1. That leaves us with 6. That leaves us with 3. At the end of the second year, you're now in debt 361,000. So you went from 330 to 345. Now you're at 361,000. Now just keep working on this for the next 30 years, Tom, and let's see what happens. How long is it going to take you to pay off your debt? Now, honest to God, I'm not lying to you when I tell you people walk in the door here at school and they're unable to make these simple calculations. But you can rest assured the IRS auditor, he can make those calculations. That guy you vote for, he can make those calculations. And he's got you people, you know, they've got you practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And when we practice the 10 commandments, we, the bottom feeders, had the money. And now that we're practicing communism, all the top feeders have the money, and we're down here working for them. So I looked at that some years ago, and I said, hell, that's no way to live. I'm not going to do that. Now, we have people come in here, and they're doctors, and they've got school loans. And I had one doctor come in here one time. This lady's a nice lady. She's making 100 bucks an hour. I forgot how much this is now. It's a damn much money. I had to take off my shoes to count it all up. 100 bucks an hour. She works 12-hour shifts. She has 12, 24, 4 days a week. 48 hours. Makes 4,800 bucks a week. I just rounded off to 5,000. You know, 5,000 bucks a week, 20,000 bucks a month. $20,000 a month. Well, hell, that's $250,000 a year. I mean, there's a nice lady making $250,000 a year. She has a student loan. Student loan. I forgot how much money she owed on the student loan, but it was a god-awful bunch of money, too, and the interest rate on it. See? And so I calculated out the interest rate over there. And I brought it back, and I showed her. I said, now, lady, you can't get out of paying this student loan. You got to pay it. I mean, you want to make $250,000 a year working a 48-hour week? Well, that's fine. Us normal people, we don't make that kind of money. But this lady is unable to make her payments. She's unable to pay her school loan. She's making her payments, but she can't get ahead, and she can't figure out why. Well, when we did the interest on here, she's going to pay back in her student loan 3 times more than she borrowed over 28 years. So I said, well, look, lady, the solution to this is very simple. What you do is you take a dedicated amount. In other words, you got to cut back on your standard of living. Instead of trying to live like you're making $250,000 a year, you got to live like you're making $25,000 a year. And then take the difference over here and pay your debts off so that you can get over here to where you're called zero COD, debt-free, zero COD. Now we can start making money. This lady's taxes were just god-awful. Single lady, you know. I forgot what her taxes were now, but by the time she paid her taxes and her school loan over here, I mean, she was just on the ragged edge of not being able to make the mortgage payment and the car payment and all the rest of this crap. I mean, this lady making $250,000 a year is just about where you people are right now, and your credit card's struggling to make ends meet. And you're going under. In fact, all of us, you know, I didn't say all of us, you know, as a collective group here in America, we're all going down. I mean, you just get used to it. Now, if you don't want to go down with everybody else, then you've got to have some kind of an idea. Some kind of a plan to separate yourself from the rest of the passengers on the Titanic, because this tub's going down. So we'll talk about how do we separate ourselves from the rest of the people on the Titanic here when we come back. That's the good news. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by pre-arrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors and publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Just keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school director at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the good news. Now, the good news I showed you the other day was from Leviticus 26. And Deuteronomy 28. So there's a guy we call God up in heaven. Now, he requires education. In fact, there's 6 statutes in the Bible where God requires you to educate your children and to educate your children in the law, to give your children a legal education, a law school education. Now, most of us woke up one day and said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to give our children liberal arts educations. Okay. So you're going to go to school and give your child a liberal arts education. That's what you got. You got a liberal arts education. That means that you're an educated fool. Can't add, can't subtract, can't connect the dots. You got letters after your names, and you have plaques on the wall and tells everybody how smart you are, but you can't pay your bills every month. Or you lost your job, and now you don't know what to do to make a living. And people are standing in line in these food banks, you know, waiting for a handout. They've been reduced to beggars, unable to feed themselves, unable to pay their bills, unable to make their payments on their houses, and so now they're going into foreclosure and receivership, and you may be one of those. Now remember, you have an education. If you're an American, Canadian, Australian, you've been to public school. It's the law. You have to. I mean, they won't let you live in this country without being educated. Now what kind of an education did you get? Well, you got a liberal arts education. Now it used to be, when you trained a child up under the Ten Commandments, what you did was you gave him a practical education. You gave him a trades education. You taught him to be a carpenter, a plumber, an electrician. My Uncle Buster, he advised me when I was 19 years old, he said, son, you want to get all of the trades under your belt that you can. I did. I'm a plumber, carpenter. I'm a pretty good electrician, but I couldn't call myself an electrician, but I can call myself a plumber or carpenter. I don't call myself a mechanic, but I can, you know, put a nut and bolt together and tighten it up. So I learned some of these trades, and so my Uncle Buster was right. See, I've never been unemployed in my life. I can always go out and ply my trades. My trades are necessary and imperative to the rest of you people out there. You know, it was this whole story, you know, this guy is a brain surgeon, and his pipes were plugged up, so he called the plumber, and the plumber came out and cleared out his drains, and the plumber gave him a bill for $345, and the guy said, you know, I'm a brain surgeon, and you were here for 15 minutes, you cleared out my drains, and charged me $345 for 15 minutes work. He said, my God, man, I'm a brain surgeon, and I don't make that kind of money. And the plumber said, I didn't make that kind of money either when I was a brain surgeon. Now, there's a little moral to that story. See, the brain surgeon over here, he can't clear his pipes up. Or he's too good to get his hands dirty. Remember, boys and girls, your plumber has to come in and take your toilet off the floor and clear that drain with your SH down that hole. And you don't want to do that. So as a plumber, I've got to tell you, somebody's got to do it or your toilet ain't going to work. So therefore, those of us that are willing to do that want to get paid for it. And we have a pretty neat union too. Yeah. And so we kind of sock it to you. Now, I'm just pointing out to you that I don't know if the average plumber can pay his bills either, because if he got into debt and he's paying usury and interest, he probably is just like that brain surgeon, scrambling to pay student loans and scrambling to pay his debts. Now, I teach a business school. And I'm a high school dropout, so I'm going to tell you right now, I'm a high school dropout. I've never been trained in economics. I don't have a master's degree or a PhD in business administration, but I can pay all of my bills. I have no student loans. I won't tell you how much money I make, but I'm making enough to pay my bills, and I'm happy as a clam at high tide. I am not complaining about $4 gas. And gasoline, by the way, boys and girls, is going to $7 a gallon. $7. Wake up and smell the coffee. I don't have any credit card debt, and I don't have any mortgage payments. I don't have any student loans. And I'm debt-free. I make enough to pay my bills. And I'm happy and I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining about the income tax. I don't pay it. And that's because I don't have any income. That's because I practice the Ten Commandments. See, I figured out that when we Americans practiced the Ten Commandments, we could all pay our bills. And we didn't have any problems. Everything was going along fine. When we converted to the Ten Planks, to the Communist Manifesto back in 1913, we got on the slippery slope. Nothing's been the same since. All right. Now, I've worked for a lot of guys in my life, and some of those guys were illiterate. Frank Rocha, remember our old buddy Frank Rocha? Illiterate, came from Portugal. He said to me at age 15, he said, Gordon, if you went to the Azores Islands where I came from, you'd starve to death. You could not make it there. And that's right, because see, those people in the Azores Islands over there, they practice communism. They're all Roman Catholics. Catholicism is communism. So if you're Catholic, get after it. I'm not, you know, bellyaching about your religious ideology. I'm just telling you, that's what all Catholics in the world are poor. Take a look at them. Show me a country where you've got rich Catholics. Now, it's true, the Pope's rich, and all the priests are rich. There's an oligarchy there that make a lot of money. They make it off of all the bottom feeders. The poor people feed the rich people at the top. That's what communism's all about. Communism is a system whereby you got a lot of little feeders down here at the bottom, working hard, producing all their goods and services, and passing it up to the rich people. The Ten Commandments is a system where everybody goes out in the marketplace and works. And then we have a thing that we call the market price. And it's called competitive market forces, just competitive market forces. You're producing oranges and I'm producing oranges. And there's customers out there. And I want to charge a dollar an orange for my oranges, but you're selling your oranges for 50 cents an orange. And you know what that does to the price of my oranges? It runs them down to 50 cents. So right away I wake up and I say, I need to get a monopoly on the orange production. If I could get a monopoly on the orange production, if I could run that other guy out of business over there, that guy that's selling those oranges for 50 cents, then I could charge a dollar an orange, because the rest of you people, you can't grow oranges. You don't have any orange trees. And that's what competitive capitalism and communism is all about. What we call in this country competitive capitalism is communism. We just have a different name for it. In Russia, they call it communism. And in China, they call it communism. And in Germany, the Germans used to call it Nazism. And Benito Mussolini called it fascism. And we Americans call it competitive capitalism. All of it comes from the Babylonian mystery religion. It's the exact opposite to the Ten Commandments and property rights. Listen to this. The first plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for the abolition of property and land and the application of all rent of land to public purpose. That's the exact opposite to the Ten Commandments, which guarantees you thou shalt not steal. It's the fundamental law of private property, thou shalt not steal. Without it, you can't have private property. And without private property, you can't have wealth. Now, you can rest assured the Pope owns a lot of wealth, private property. And the bishops and cardinals and the oligarchy and the Catholic Church around the world, those people own private property. There's private property all over the world. Now, the trick for you and me, whether you're a truck driver or whether you're a doctor, a dentist, a lawyer, or whatever it is to get your property back. All right, now let's go back and take a little look at history here. Back in 1933, Franklin Roosevelt, here's the Depression. Remember, we went after this paper money with the Federal Reserve Bank in 1913. 20 years later, the United States goes into bankruptcy. Bankruptcy. The wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world goes into bankruptcy in 20 years practicing fiat paper currency. And the paper currency was ostensibly guaranteed by the gold that we, the taxpayers, were handling. So Franklin Roosevelt comes out with House Joint Resolution 192, and they suck in all the gold, so put it in Fort Knox. And you people haven't seen your gold from that day to this. They took your gold away from you, gave you paper money. Now, you people, most of you, went to college, and you got a degree, and you're using Federal Reserve note dollars and cannot connect the dots between gold and payment and paper and discharge. Now, I've taken you through that roll a couple of times, you know. Your government did not take your gold away from you in 1933 or your silver from you in 1965 for no good purpose. They needed to take your property away from you and your property rights, and they did. And you people now have been living without property or property rights from that day to this. Now you're sitting here saying, well, God, I don't understand why. I'm losing my job. It's being outsourced to India. I got a call the other day from AT&T. And this lady was talking, you people at AT&T, I don't mind you hiring some guy in India, but find somebody that can speak English, would you? American English. This lady was on the other end over there. She could hardly speak English. Well, you know, English. You know, you Englishmen over there and Australians, you call that English, you know, but here in the United States, you know, we listen to you people over there. You might as well be speaking German because we don't grasp, you know, about every third word I can pull out, you know. And I got to say, what'd you say? How's that again? Well, that's the way this lady was. Well, somebody here in the United States had that job getting $10 or $15 an hour, and so they gave it to this Indian woman over in India, and now she's probably working for $3, $4 a day, happy as a clam at high tide. So is AT&T. The only guy that ain't happy is me because I can't understand what the hell this woman's talking about. And they might want to shut my phone off for non-payment or something. I don't know. All right, so here's the moral to the story over here. We Americans have become a nation of educated fools, unable to connect the dots, unable to count, crying out loud. And I say it's time for us to wake up and smell the coffee, and let's work out a different plan. And that's why I say this is good news. You know, once you can wake up to the reality of what in the hell's causing your problem, hell, now we can solve it. We can solve this problem. All right, so number one, we need to stop paying interest. Now, 23 times in the Bible, your Creator said, don't pay interest. Don't charge usury. Don't practice that. 23 times. All right, now, if you've got a credit card, you're paying interest. If you've got a mortgage on your house, you're paying interest. Now, right, the first thing that a student says in here, well, how am I going to live? See, that's my point. You've been educated to the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. Communism is the only thing you know. I hear you, Tom. I understand. I hear you. I'm an old-timey practicing communist. I have the same problem you've got. You're a doctor making $100 an hour. If I didn't have my credit card, how would I pay my bills? Listen, Tom, the credit card is your problem. Let's connect these dots. The credit card is your problem. You got to get out from under the credit card. I don't know how to pay my debts, and I don't know how to pay my bills if I didn't have my credit card. All right, Tom, you got to learn how to live without a credit card. Now, let me tell you, boys and girls, the first time I heard of a credit card was in 1958. Bank of America sent me a Bank of America card. They called it Bank America card. Now they call it Visa because the Bank of America card, that's such a long handle. People didn't like it, so they called it Visa. So I just changed it over, and so now you get this Visa gold card. See, they talk about gold. There's no gold connected with that card. It's plastic. You know, it's not a gold card. I know because I have some gold, and I know what gold looks like. I know what it feels like, and I know what a plastic credit card looks like, and I know what it feels like. And when somebody says, I've got a Visa gold card, I look at them like, huh? Visa? They're making credit cards out of gold now? No, that isn't the way that works. And you people are being deceived. You're being lied to. This is called double speak. And it's like crying peace, peace, when there is no peace. And your president comes out and says the economy is fundamentally sound. If the economy is fundamentally sound, then why is the president sending out these rebate checks to stimulate the economy? $150 billion. Huh? I'm not sending you people out $150 rebate checks to get you to come to school. I don't give a damn whether you come to school or not. How do you like that? The president over here lies to you every day. Let's wake up and connect those dots. The economy is sick. The economy is in recession. We're in hyperinflation. Look at the low beginning stages of hyperinflation at 18% a year. And it's going to grow. How big will it grow? I don't know. In Brazil, hyperinflation set in 3 days and hit 5,000%. They've had it in Israel. They've had it in Hungary. Germany, China, Japan, I mean, God, hell, we had here in the United States in 1783. So I just wanted to point out to you that the first thing we need to do is to take some positive action. Now, if you can't connect these dots, we teach a business school here. I'll teach you how to do this. I can have you out of debt in 90 days. 90 days. Hell, for most of you people, you can get out of debt in about 30 days. And I can bring you out of debt and up to zero COD in 90 days. And I'll bet you that you don't have any credit debt counselors out there that can do that. And that's because they're going to have you over here making payments. And I'm sitting here telling you, boys and girls, that's your problem. Making payments is your problem. Paying usury and interest is your problem. And working for income is your problem. And paying income tax is your problem. Those aren't solutions. If paying income tax and interest was the solution, hell, you wouldn't have a problem, would you? For crying out loud, let's start using our brains for crying out loud for something beside a hat rack. If income tax, a degree after your name, and paying usury and interest on your Visa gold card is the answer to your financial problems, how in the hell did you get into trouble to start with? What did you do that your Visa gold card is going to solve? Now, boys and girls, you went to public school, practiced the 10th plank of the Communist Manifesto. Let me read that to you. 10th plank. Calls for free education for all children in public school and the abolition of children's factory labor in its present form and the combination of education with industrial production. That last line is the key. The educational system is the combination of education with industrial production. You go to public school to learn how to be an employee for Bill Gates at Microsoft. You went to college to learn how to be a lawyer so that you could be a cash cow paying taxes to the United States of America, called the income tax. You went to school so that you can be taught and trained to pay 16% of everything you create and produce into the Social Security system so that you can employ tens of thousands of government bureaucrats and keep them employed and living at a standard of living to which they have now become accustomed. That's the purpose for the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. Now, God has a purpose for education also. And in the Bible, he comes right out and says, he's got six statutes. He says, I want you to educate your children in this law. I want you to educate your children too. Thou shalt not commit adultery. You went to public school and went to college, and they taught you how to practice adultery. They taught you girls to be whores by the time you were in the ninth grade and maybe even the eighth grade in public school. Called sex education. And your creator came along and said, now listen, this whoredom over here is not good. That's a bad policy. They taught you to be thieves. They taught you to steal with Federal Reserve notes. They taught you to use unjust weights and balances and checks and how to buy stocks and negotiable instruments and bonds and one thing and another. And you people went out and you put all of your money, you've been working for years and years, and you put your money into these 401ks and these Kroger plans and invested your money in the stock market. Now, I've reported on this before. Let me report on it again. If you bought in 1960, if you bought the Dow Jones Industrials, the blue chip stocks in 1960, $10,000, you invested your money. In the year 2000, you cashed your stocks in. Your net loss was $3,800. You had a net loss of $3,800 in purchasing power. And you people go to public school and you can't understand purchasing power versus constant dollars. And I don't know how many times people come in here and they say, oh, we're so much better off today than we were back in the Depression years. No, you aren't. You're worse off today than you were then. See, back in the Depression years, people were short of money, but they weren't in debt. Today, you're not short of money. No, you got plenty of money. The amount of money that you have is the shortage. It isn't that you're short of money. Now, you got lots of it, and you're making lots of money, $100 an hour. But your debts are piling up at $110 an hour. So you got $100 an hour coming in, you got debts mounting up at $110 an hour. You got lots of money, but you don't have enough of that lots of money. Hey, you're not better off today than you were in 1935. And you're worse off today than you were in 1935. Worse off. Now, your living standards are higher. Now, you're out here driving a Lexus. And I was watching a guy the other day, he had customized plates on his Lexus. And I asked myself, I said, geez, I wonder if that Lexus is paid for. Now, I got a car out here. My car is a 1999 model. It's 9 years old. I don't drive a new Lexus. But the other day, I saw an ad, and then it said for $499 a month, I could be driving a new Cadillac. Now, the people that drive new Cadillacs over here are doctors and dentists and people, you know, with money. So I asked myself, I said, well, can I afford $499 a month? And the answer to that is yes. Yes, I could probably afford $499 a month. Will I? No. Why? It's a bad business deal. It's a good business deal for General Motors, but it's a bad business deal for George Gordon. Now, if I went out and bought a new Cadillac, could I go out and buy a brand new Cadillac? I'm just plunk down gold coin for it. Yeah, I could. Yeah. Would I? No. Why? It's a bad business deal. It's just bad business. And all of you people, I drive down the highways like you do, and I'm amazed at all these new cars down the road. I mean, everybody's got a new car, except me. But my car's paid for, and I'm not paying any interest, and I'm not making any payments, and I ain't working as a cash cow giving milk to some bureaucrat in Washington, D.C., or to some banker over here, you know, at the local Bank of America. I'm not feeding bankers and bureaucrats, politicians. Hell, they can go out and get a job just like I do. They can go out and work, clear their own toilets and fix their own motors and do all those things that all the rest of us bottom feeders are doing out here for ourselves, and just like I'm doing. And all of a sudden, if you did that, you know what you'd have? A whole lot fewer people working in government. So government would be a lot smaller, and it would be a whole lot less intrusive. I mean, you know, if you've got people running around, like let me give you an illustration here. The other day they put lights up at the corner of Glenstone and Sunshine. Camera. Put a camera up there. And they came out. I mean, these guys, they've got a lot of gonads. I mean, they just got, you know, balls like you can't believe. And so they said, listen, we're doing this for the health, safety, and welfare of the public. What a crock of BS. That's to catch you running the yellow light so that they can send you a $110 ticket for running the red light. Nobody's ever been killed running the yellow light. It's impossible. It's never happened. Can't happen. Isn't likely to happen. It has nothing to do with the health, welfare, and the safety of the traveling public. It has to do with milking cash cows with driver's licenses. That's all. Now, if you had fewer of these traffic engineers with college degrees after their names who have to justify their existence, I mean, they got to make their paycheck somehow. And so they've already got traffic lights up. They've already got the intersection put in. So now the solution to the problem is to pay our paychecks over here. We got to catch people doing something that we can call a criminal violation so that we can give them a ticket. All these traffic fines are is a taxation. It's just more tax. That's what it boils down to. And then they subject all of us to that. And the inconvenience and the indignity of this process. Traffic cops are not out there to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public. That's the cover story. Their real purpose out there is to protect the claims window of the insurance industry. That's their job. They've got a role in life. Now, if we would stop buying insurance, if we would stop paying interest and usury, number one, and then stop buying insurance, then what would happen? Do you know that there was an America, there was a Canada, there was an Australia before insurance, before income? And I contend that there will be a Canada, Australia, and a United States of America after insurance and after income tax. Did you know that? All right. Now, if you'd like to learn how to do that up front, we teach a school here called a business school. Why don't you call and ask us about our business school? Let's see if we can't take you out of the stanchion. And instead of being a cash cow for the political system, practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, let's see if we can't make you a common law free man working for yourself for a change. Wild new concept. Work for yourself. And I ain't talking about self-employment. I mean, common law freeman. Now I'm about out of time here, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily over the internet and radio. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and The Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.